Good morning. It's 11 minutes before 8 a.m. This is Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. Today is Thursday, January 23rd, 2014. I'm Melissa Marconi-Wenzel with Raven News. Democrats in Southeast Alaska are taking applications for the House seat being vacated by Beth Kurtula. Kurtula plans to resign effective Friday for a fellowship at Stanford University. The Tongass Democrats, in a release, say interested individuals have until Monday to submit cover letters and resumes. A committee will review prospective candidates and send Governor Sean Parnell a list of three finalists no later than February 4th. The Democratic group says Kurtula's successor must reside within the boundaries of her current district, which includes Tenneke Springs, Juneau, Skagway, Gustavus, and Petersburg. The governor must appoint a qualified replacement within 30 days of a vacancy. The appointee must belong to the same political party as the predecessor and, in this case, is subject to confirmation by a majority of House Democrats. A Sitka-based commercial flying service has filed suit against the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium over the cancellation of an air ambulance contract. Harris Aircraft Services filed Friday in Sitka Superior Court. It alleges that Search purported to terminate the air ambulance contract with Harris on July 2, 2013, and refused to perform its promises and obligations. Harris Aircraft Services is seeking damages exceeding $100,000 for each of three counts, including breach of contract. Harris and Search were working together, bringing air ambulance services to locations served by Search. But in July, Search announced it was closing its air medical service department, effective September 30th. Harris Air claims it leased an aircraft for $23,000 to service its Search contract. With one member absent Monday night, the Ketchikan Gateway Borough Assembly narrowly approved a motion authorizing more money for a lawsuit challenging the state of Alaska over education funding. The vote was so close that the mayor, who was homesick, phoned in to break the tie. KRBD's Layla Carey has more.
Borough Mayor Dave Kiefer apparently guessed how the lawsuit funding vote would pan out because he'd arranged for the clerk to call just prior to that motion so he could break the tie. The motion was to appropriate an additional $150,000 toward a lawsuit that the borough filed against the state. The lawsuit challenges the state over what the borough says is an unfair mandate requiring boroughs and first-class cities, but not anyone else, to fund a minimum level for local schools. There wasn't much discussion when the motion came to the floor, but earlier during public comment, a former borough assembly member sparked some debate with a simple question. Here's Jim Shoemaker speaking at the lectern.
In the merits, I wholeheartedly agree with. I voted for it. But what if we win? Where does the money come from? And so when you turn around and you look at funding this at this point in time, I think that we have to stop at this point in time and take a look and say, okay, where does the state go? It may not be our obligation, but we live in the state of Alaska, and ultimately we're going to pay.
Shoemaker says the state will have to make up for the revenue somewhere, so either a service will go away or a new tax will be implemented. Assembly members agreed to some extent, but noted that if the borough wins and the court requires the legislature to fix the problem, any solution the state comes up with would at least be fair to everyone. In response to Shoemaker's comments, Borough Manager Dan Bockhorst says the question is legitimate and one that the assembly has considered. But Bockhorst has his own question.
What if we do nothing? If we don't draw a line in the sand and push back now, at what point do we do that? In the 7 years that the assembly has been considering that, this community has paid $34 million in required contributions, unconstitutional. It's a complex issue. The assembly has discussed it inside and out, and you as a member of the assembly participated in that. There's a lot more to it than just how is it going to get funded? It's going to get funded one way or another, but it's going to be more fair than what it is now.
For quite a few years, the borough has tried encouraging the legislature to find a solution, but until recently had no luck. On January 10th, however, Fairbanks Republican Representative Tammy Wilson pre-filed a bill in the State House that would repeal the required local contribution. That bill will be considered this legislative session. In the meantime, though, the lawsuit will move forward. The $150,000 to fund it will come from the borough's Economic Development Fund and should pay for costs through June. With Assemblymember Todd Phillips absent, the vote was 3-3 until Kiefer broke the tie. Those voting against the motion were Alan Bailey, Jim Van Horn, and Bill Rotecki. In Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
Earlier this month, Sitkins spread out over land and sea to take part in an annual tradition, the Christmas Bird Count. The Bird Count, organized by the Audubon Society, doesn't actually take place on Christmas. This year's count in Sitka was on January 4th, but it once did. Alaska Raptor Center veterinarian Vicki Vosburgh has managed the Sitka count for the past several years.
It started on Christmas over 100 years ago. The first count was in 1900, and it was in response to the tradition of everyone going out and hunting or killing birds on Christmas Day.
The first organizers decided to challenge that tradition and go out counting birds instead of hunting them. 27 observers took part in 25 locations across the U.S. and Canada. This year, over 63,000 people were expected to take part, counting birds at 2,200 locations in both North and South America during a three-week period between December 14th and January 5th. The Sitka count started in the winter of 1974-75 and has continued almost every year since. This year, over 40 people took part, and the counters came up with some big numbers. Jen Cedarleaf of the Alaska Raptor Center manages the count with Vosburgh.
The biggest one for me, I think, was the black oyster catchers. We saw 49 black oyster catchers, and that's a new high. Our high before that was 17. So that's a really kind of cool thing to see this time of year. And we also had a really high numbers on chestnut-backed chickadees and the Pacific wren, formerly the winter wren. And then, of course, the Eurasian collared dove, which I don't think we got a full count of the Eurasian collared doves. We only got 19, and I have a suspicion there's a lot more of them in this community than 19.
Yes, the Eurasian collared dove. More on them in a minute. Now in its 114th year, the bird count is one of the longest-running wildlife studies in the world, and the data collected by all those citizen scientists is being put to some decidedly modern uses. Scientists have used the counts to track changes in bird populations and territories, especially as birds shift their ranges in response to climate change. One prime example, the Eurasian collared dove. This is Vicki Vosburgh.
As our climate changes, we're seeing birds move into areas that they weren't in before, and a perfect example in Sitka is the Eurasian collared dove. Jen and I are actually going to have to rewrite our checklist because the Eurasian collared dove isn't on it, and clearly it is now a resident of Sitka, and we need to add it to our list because it will be counted every year.
Yep, a breeding resident.
Yes.
Birding enthusiasts will have a chance to take part in another count soon, the Great Backyard Bird Count, which takes place in February. And enrollment in the summer sessions of the Sitka Fine Arts Camp is off to a strong start. The camp enrolled over 700 students last summer. As of last Friday, Camp Director Roger Schmidt said well more than half those slots were filled.
January 1st is when registration starts, and there seems to be a long tradition now where students stay up till the New Year's Eve and start signing up. So enrollment's going great.
It has not always been this way. The camp started in 1972 on the campus of what was then Sheldon Jackson College. There were several years when it relocated to Mount Edgecombe High School. Schmidt says uncertainty was a huge factor in the camp's limited growth at the time.
Not having this feeling that we knew for sure it was going to happen next year, no matter, you know, how much the kids loved it or how successful it was, really affected kind of how we approached programming.
The trustees of Sheldon Jackson College donated their core campus to the Sitka Fine Arts Camp in February of 2011. The camp opens in its now permanent home in the second week of June for elementary school students in kindergarten through sixth grade. In addition to the traditional morning programs, the elementary camp has added afternoon programming, including a chorale camp, percussion and brass, and a string workshop. There's also a circus camp. Schmidt says interest in circus has exploded with the popularity of companies like Cirque du Soleil. But at camp, circus is not really about death-defying acrobatics. Like everything else, it's about art.
today we're continuing that tradition of trying to open up as broad of an artistic world of kind of what's possible out there. And Circus Camp is really, in itself, you know, its very essence is about what's possible when you sort of bring your body, your imagination, and your mind all together with a group of people.
A two-week middle school camp follows the elementary camp, then a two-week high school session. Musical theater camp comes next for high school and college students. Students go from script to performance in only 2 weeks. In 2011, the camp staged Bye Bye Birdie. Last year, it was Seussical the Musical. Camp program manager Rihanna Gavant says it's intense.
A full, fully staged, fully costumed musical. And it's always just an amazing thing to see the students work so hard, and then the product is always just absolutely amazing. So that's something I always look forward to seeing.
The camp has expanded its summer offerings to adults. Anyone is welcome to enroll in the Native Jazz Workshop and study with nationally known artists like Jason Marsalis. The D. Daniels Vocal Jazz Workshop also caters to students of any age. Camp director Roger Schmidt doesn't really see a place the camp can't go.
We're experimenting every day with programming, and it's really fun.
The preparations for opening the camp begin in earnest this time of year. Schmidt says there are Saturday volunteer work parties scheduled every weekend from now through the spring. The focus is staining and finishing the trim in Allen Memorial Hall, which houses the Odessa Theater. For more information on the Sitka Fine Arts Camp, visit our website, kcaw.org. And that's it for Raven News for this morning. It's 8 a.m. This is KCAW Sitka. Let's take a look at some things going on in our community calendar, which you can also access online at any time at our website, kcaw.org. Southeast Alaska Independent Living's Senior Hiking Club will hike Mosquito Cove this morning, 9:15 a.m. Call 747-6859 if you have any questions. Kettleson Library's preschool story time will be held 10:30 a.m. today. Tammy Bentz of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game will introduce Project Wild materials and curriculum today, 4:15 p.m. at Kettleson Library. This will be a video conference. We're going to rejoin NPR's Morning Edition, and do stay tuned for our local interview, which is coming up at 8:18. Have a great morning.